This is the Be A Coach podcast, episode number 23.
Welcome to the Be A Coach podcast, online at thebacoach.com, helping business analysts take their craft to the next level. It doesn't matter if you are a brand new BA or you've been practicing for many years, there is always something we can all do to take our BA skills and techniques up a notch. And now, here is your host, author, blogger, musician, and BA evangelist, Yaqub Muhammad, also known as Yamo.
Hello there, and welcome to the BA Coach Podcast. I'm your host, Yamo, aka at the BA Coach on Twitter. Reporting to you from the beautiful city of Toronto on the first day of spring. And I wish that you have a great start to this wonderful new season. And before we start, a couple quick items. The registrations for the CBAP CCBA prep boot camps in London, United Kingdom and Toronto are now open. And if you can just go to thebacoach.com/London, and look for yourself the learning objectives and the benefits that you're going to get out of this course. I would really appreciate it. And I'm positive that you will see a great value in it too. Also, the course is being conducted by a good friend, business partner, Adrian Reed from UK, who did the first BA interview on the show. And he's also an ISIP certified and strongly advocates having CBAP as a great add-on in the United Kingdom. So check it out, and please do register if you're able to attend. The URL again is thebacoach.com/London. And likewise, if you're in Toronto, Canada, you can go to thebacoach.com/Toronto. So back to our episode today, which is a special author cast with Ellen Gottesdiener and Mary Gorman. Special for a couple of reasons. First off, it's on agile business analysis, which seems to be the quote-unquote buzzword these days. And secondly, this is the first three-way BA Coach podcast. In today's show, you will learn a brief comparison of traditional and agile business analysis. Agile or agile, both are right ways of saying it, by the way. Do we really need a BA in agile projects? The importance of immediate feedback in agile. How business analysis contributes to Scrum teams, some great insights on multi-modeling, and my favorite line from them. It's all about the goal, not the role. Here's a show.
Hi, Ellen. Hi, Mary.
Hi.
How are you guys doing?
Great.
Very good.
All right. It's really awesome to have you guys on the show. We have a very interesting topic lined up about agile business analysis. So agile business analysis, does it really exist?
Mary, why don't you take that first question?
Oh, I think it does. I mean, before you start coding, you have to know what it is you're going to deliver. So we just definitely believe that the type of analysis that has to be done to understand the business need and the ultimate business value is imperative. So we don't waste time developing something that may not meet the mark.
I mean, the team is right. What Mary's saying, you're not just going to start coding and testing anything. You have to know what it is that you're going to build to begin with. So if it's not anything that's a specific, if analysis isn't specifically called out as an activity, the team is doing it anyway.
So it's a shift in mindset from, let's say, a traditional waterfall business analysis versus agile. So where is the shift happening in terms of, you know, what you've seen in the projects that you've worked on or, you know, have trained folks on?
Well, go ahead, Mary. You could start and then I'll add.
Sure. It would be helpful if we're in the same room, but we'll make this happen. So my idea, I think what I've noticed, and I started out as a programmer many, many years ago, is the idea, the immediacy of identifying something that's valuable and within a very, very short time frame, taking that narrow slice of business value and building something that you could potentially release. It's not like you're waiting 3 months, or sometimes, you know, we used to wait 8 or 9 months, do our analysis, and then 6 or 7 months later, something would actually be developed. That's so compressed now. So I think the biggest challenge most folks that we work with have is trying to identify that narrow slice of business value. So Ellen, you know, maybe you want to add a little more to that?
Yeah, I mean, that is the very directly what Mary said is very true, because with traditional analysis, you're trying to get all the requirements up front as though you can omnipotently understand what the final product is going to be. Mm. And often, you know, we know that a lot of the even though they have some value, but a lot of the premise behind Waterfall is that you know what you're going to build up front, and that's in many cases not true. Yeah. The requirements evolve. It's a knotty problem that we have in software, because we don't really know what we need to build until we start to build it. So a huge value in agile practices, which by the way are not new, but these iterative and incremental development practices have been around for quite a while. There's a huge value in getting feedback on what you built and how you build it as quickly as possible, so you can eliminate and learn what you don't need to build, and you can learn how to build the product, collaborate on building the product together. So the ability for the team to do what Mary was saying, get some immediate delivery of value, is really, really critical. So the analyst is so, and I should say analysis, the goals of analysis we're trying to achieve to get a shared understanding of the product needs. That is essential for success. So we're not in traditional, we're not doing as we did in traditional analysis, where we're pretty much involved upfront and then we go away. Or maybe we come back as our analyst, quote, role, and we get involved in testing. That's not true. In Agile, we're involved all the way through. Yeah. So it's really cool. It's very exciting, because you're seeing, you're helping the product evolve as you're going through. You're not leaving and coming back later.
Absolutely. And I think that's the essential and kind of core of the shift that's happening, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I happened to kind of speak with a bunch of BAs, and also, you know, I was talking to you about Adrian. We kind of came up with a set of questions related to agile business analysis and how it kind of is impacting the way we look at it, and some intriguing questions to the methodology itself.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of your thoughts in terms of, let's say, we are doing feasibility phase of the project. What is the role of agile business analysis, let's say, in the feasibility part where you define a business case? What that could entail is you may have a business case that may be wrong, that you're trying to build faster.
Well, yeah, So you're trying to build the wrong thing faster?
Yeah.
That's not, well, the thing that what Mary was saying, I think we come back to that, is that we're picking the most valuable thing to build first. And if we don't know, we build some small slice and get feedback, so we'll find out if it's not valuable. Mm-hmm. So we don't waste all this time building something we don't really need. One of the things that you'll do is you may go through some discovery activities where you do some analysis, and here's, you might pull in some of the practice from usability research, do contextual inquiry and prototyping, and do what you might call a spike. That term comes from XP. It means basically a research spike, or deliver something as quickly as possible to learn. And so one of the powerful ideas here is that you could do a research spike to test whether the product and the idea for the product is feasible, and do that as quickly as possible. So you spend a lot less time and money. Does that make sense?
Yes, it makes sense, absolutely. Now, if somebody has to define a business case, Is there a specific leg of agile methodology that fits into that scenario?
Well, I don't think the pure analysis we do changes dramatically. It's just how much analysis we would do, the scope of that analysis. Mm. So we still need to know who are the users, you know, what all the market research that would have to be done. Those aren't going to be necessarily neglected in Agile. And if they are, well, that's another issue. But the standard good analysis that's done by an organization to determine if they want to expend the time, the money, the effort, what's the market share, all of that other good work still has to take place. Mm-hmm. Now, there is work out there where people can take a more agile approach to that, but maybe it's agile market analysis. Mm. And a lot of BAs may not be involved in that. Maybe more senior ones would. Uh-huh. But I think that this idea that understanding what the value is, you have to know the cost plus the benefit and any risk. That's true whether you're doing Agile or not. I would say, though, that if you are going to be using Agile for the first time in developing your software, you've got to factor in the risk of using a new technology.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, that's so true.
And there's also, and in addition to what Mary said about risk, there's also maybe business risk or market risk.
Yeah.
So if you're building the product for internal use versus commercial use, we want to consider those things that Mary mentioned, cost, benefit, and risk. That stuff does not go away.
Yeah, that's more like the underlying foundation, right, of what you want to build.
Yep, it's all about value. That's the big mantra.
Yeah.
You know, we're building to deliver value as quickly as possible. Mm. Yeah, so there's this delicate balancing act between building something as quickly as you can that's useful, but that's building it right with high quality, and building the right thing. So there's still no excuse for not making sure you're building the right thing, doing the discovery, doing enough due diligence, if you will, to know that this is the vision for the product. Here's our market, whether we're talking internal or external. Here's the value. Let's test if this really is the right thing. And that's where Agile can be really helpful in saving a lot of time and money by building something in a short period of time to get feedback. That's the key. Get feedback continuously.
Yeah continuous feedback. Yes, those are the two keywords. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Emu, it's also, I'm not sure if you're intended audience is very familiar with the IIBA, International Institute of Business Analysis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they will be. Yeah, for the most part, I think a lot of them know about IIBA. It's the BA community.
So when we think about the BA body of knowledge, it's in a non-agile form at this point in 2.0, and Ellen's working on a team that's taking an agile flavor. Mm-hmm. But we still would go back to the enterprise analysis knowledge area, which is defining the business need and assessing your capability gaps.
Yes.
And determining or defining the business case. Mm-hmm. So that would be, you know, essential for any effort, whether they're using Agile or not. It's just, I think, again, as Ellen said, trying to do a research spike potentially to get a sense of maybe it's technology. Is this going to be a viable technology? Or understanding what the risks might be, which need to go into that business case also.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And that's the foundation of anything that you will do. There's another popular question that's making the rounds. You might have heard it. We don't need a BA in an Agile project. Why do we need a BA in an Agile project?
Well, Ellen and I can stand on our soapbox and recite, you know, or chant, it's not the role, it's the goal. What's the goal of the team? The goal of the team is to deliver a valued product. So I think we're moving past the days where you put on your baseball cap and it says BA on it, or you put on your hat that says tester. It's around contributing skills and using the disciplines of many of these areas. Ellen mentioned user experience. Mm-hmm. Well, you might look at someone today who considers themselves a business analyst. Mm-hmm. A lot of the work they're doing is aligned with user experience discipline. And many of the folks that Ellen and I work with will also take on the role of testing. So it becomes, for the team to be successful, many of these skills in a variety of disciplines have to be brought together. Mm-hmm. And I think the analyst role, if we could say that it's the work, who is doing the work of business analysis? So Ellen, do you want to maybe share a little bit of what you've just been writing about with...
Maybe you can get on your soapbox now.
Yeah.
And now my soapbox is twice as tall as Mary's to make up for the height difference between the two of us. Right, Mary? You can attest to that, right?
Yes. She's the short one. I'm the tall one.
Yeah, definitely. Mary and I has been just reviewing, drafting a post, an article and blog post on it's the goal, not the role, and how business analysis contributes to Scrum teams in particular, because most people know about Scrum as the basically ubiquitous language, if you will, or methodology, even though there are multiple methods mm-hmm. for doing Agile. Scrum is the most well-known. And, you know, if you look at Scrum, the Scrum method, which really is a framework, has three roles. It has a product owner role who makes decisions about what to build and when to build it, and they're the business expert. Mm-hmm. So they have to get the voice of the business expert and the customer in there. Then there's the Scrum Master, which is a kind of funny name, as some of you probably are familiar with. It doesn't mean that you are the master of knowledge, but you really are the team facilitator. Mm-hmm. And then there's the team. And the team is a cross-functional delivery team that delivers the product. Mm-hmm. So there's no role there of a tester. Is everybody still there? Okay. There's no role of a tester. There's no role of an analyst. There's no role of a developer, an architect, a data person. It's just the delivery team. Uh-huh. So, you know, in our experience in working with Agile teams and those that are using Scrum, people with really good facilitation and analysis and communication skills can make great Scrum Masters, if you want to talk about roles. Mm-hmm. At the same time, if the team needs to have business analysis skills, so the business analyst may blend into the delivery team, the classic business analysis. Or if the product owner delegates decision-making authority to mm-hmm. somebody with business analysis skill, they are now the product owner. And maybe there's a Uber ultimate product owner. Uh-huh. And that's you got to be careful with that, because the business analyst is the business analyst, the classic business analyst is not the product owner unless mm-hmm. unless they are explicitly given decision making authority about what to build and when. Mm. And that, you know, we usually see that when an analyst person, the person with analysis skills, reports within the business or product management. That's sort of a pattern, but not necessarily always the case. But the analysis work is what's really needed. So whether you're using Scrum or not, there's the day-to-day inside a delivery cycle, which could be a time box like an iteration of mm-hmm. 2 weeks, or it could be a release, which could be a week or 2 weeks, depending on your release schedule. Mm-hmm. Day to day, somebody has got to say, oh yes, these are the business rules, this is the data we need, here's the acceptance criteria, yep, that's how I would test it. And that tactical work is really hard sometimes for one person to do when they also have to have the big view of the strategy, the product roadmap, communicating to, particularly in a commercial world, the external community, mm-hmm. defining a theme for a release or any kind of larger delivery cycle. So there's these strategic and tactical product owner or product champion things that have to happen. Mm-hmm. And so what happens because some of these folks that are playing that role don't necessarily have the time for or even have the analysis skills, is that the analysis work, that discipline is done by somebody principally on the team that can lead the analysis. And that is a really powerful and critical role for many teams to have as part of the delivery team.
I really love the theme of this whole thing that you guys brought out. It's not the role, it's the goal.
Yeah.
The BA plays different roles depending on, you know, what the team decides. And it's looking like more so the role of a scrum master, is it?
Not necessarily, but they could be. I mean,
so what's been your observation in terms of the projects that you've seen and trained folks on?
Well, maybe I'll mention a few and then Mary can chime in. I remember one team specifically building commercial software, and the analyst, when I came in, we did some coaching and then we did a agile jump start to build the product, help them build the product backlog, prune it, and do planning for a delivery cycle. Mm-hmm. And part of my job was to help coach the analyst to become the scrum master. Mm-hmm. And she was awesome. She had really great facilitation skills. She was able to be neutral. She was able to help lead the team through supplemental analysis models for user stories. Mm-hmm. So that was a case where the analyst moved into the Scrum Master role. Mm-hmm. In other situations, Mary and I both recently worked with a client where the analyst was part of the delivery team. And he was helping the team with data and glossary, and helping with the technique that we've been teaching and coaching folks on, mm-hmm. slicing requirements into thin slices and doing the necessary dependency analysis. So that was the role that he was playing. So he was really on the delivery team. Mm. And other clients, a lot of what we do coaching on is working with what you would call the product owner or product champion, who tend to have really, really rich domain expertise. Yeah. However, they need... Yeah.
Ellen, let me just share a quick story, because the one that really sticks in my mind, you remember we have a client and it's a large medical hospital. And the team consisted of a number of folks we might have called developers, mm-hmm. a group of folks who were probably more in an analysis role, and the product owner was this wonderful nurse who knew intimately what needed to be delivered. And she played such a pivotal role. And what I found especially... insightful in watching this team at work. It was so blended. Mm-hmm. This person, the nurse, was communicating directly with the folks who were doing the development. And there were other folks who were doing significant research, working on prototypes. And you might have called them in the old days a business analyst. Mm-hmm. But it was, if you looked at that team in action, it would have been very hard as they were working on, we were helping them to slice some of their stories to a very discrete size. Yeah. That was just a perfect example where they were focused on building this product, and there wasn't this official, like, who's doing what. They just worked together.
So it was the goal in this instance.
Yes, that's right.
They were chasing a goal, all of them as one team.
Mm-hmm.
Nice,
yep.
Interesting. So that's where a business user kind of, you know, played a pivotal role.
And she didn't appear to be a business user. She was a user, but she was also representing a much larger medical community.
Mm, for sure. Absolutely. More like a super user, sort of.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Right.
Another question that comes to mind is regarding cultural changes. What cultural changes to expect? For, let's say, you know, if somebody is starting to do an agile project in an organization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If nobody is used to making quick decisions, giving one person the authority to make those decisions So that may require some courage and change, right? So
yes.
What kind of cultural changes do folks or organizations need to expect once they tread on this path?
Wow. Well, I think a lot of it is the value of collaboration, and that we're going to, it really goes back in many ways to the role thing. We're not going to worry too much about sticking with a silo specific role, and we may pitch in from time to time and do other things. It's a specific example. I remember working with a team, and we were doing iteration planning, and the tester was unfortunately split amongst three different teams. Mm-hmm. And through planning, we had a bunch of user stories up on the wall that we wanted to deliver in the next two-week iteration, and we were determining tasks and who had time based on capacity. Mm. This tester, he was out of capacity. He did not have any further time. And the person who you could call the analyst did have time. So he kind of put his hand up and said, I have no more capacity, which would mean the team as a project community, that delivery team, would have difficulty making a commitment to deliver this work for the product owner. Mm-hmm. And so she said, the analyst said, hey, I have capacity. How about if you pull back some of your time working on testing this requirement, in our case it was a user story, this user story, then you could teach me how you're running your test cycles, mm-hmm. and I can pitch in and do that other work. So that's what they did. And it was just this magic just happened because they knew that they were going to make a commitment to the product owner and wanted to. So she didn't have to stick to the role of a classic BA, and she added those, you know, did the testing work. Mm-hmm. So I guess the point there is that part of the cultural change is that we're willing to do what matters to deliver value to the business, period.
Yeah.
And we're willing to take on additional tasks or skills and grow our discipline in order to make that happen. That's one thing I would add, and then I'd ask Mary what she's observed.
What I think is a recurring topic that we really see in traditional and non-agile is something that you actually wrote about, Amut, which I loved, was about data modeling, data analysis. Mm-hmm. And I think you wrote about that earlier, a few months ago or so.
Yeah.
And so the idea that understanding, analyzing the data, many of our agile teams get so focused on the user story, and they get focused on what we call the action dimension.
Yeah.
And making sure that we address and model, as well as get into the details about the user role, the data, and business rules. Mm-hmm. So what we try to do is to, the whole team should develop that attention and sensitivity towards those, but it's often from an analysis background that we can bring those perspectives. So thinking about the four functional requirements, which Ellen and I are writing about in our book, about mm-hmm. the user role, the actions the product needs to provide, the data that will be either acted on or stored in the product, mm-hmm. as well as the business rules that need to be enforced. Mm-hmm. So working together, visualizing that work, doing wall work with very lightweight models. So if an analyst today in a traditional world is not prepared to bring to bear the ability to do multi-modeling, to analyze those requirements at those functional levels, as well as to look at the non-functional requirements in concert with the functional, that's going to be a real drawback.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it'll all need to blend together to kind of, you know, make sense, right?
And that's another thing, Yamo, that we see that is really important, is that the community, the delivery team, the product champion or product owner, mm-hmm. visualize mm-hmm. the work that needs to be done to build the product together. So
yeah.
as much as possible, you know, there's a lot of discussion in the Agile community about big visible charts.
Mm.
those charts have to do with burning down or burning up work and value. Another part of what needs to be big visible is this idea of, say, what we've been calling, Mary and I have been calling, a mood board, where we have visualizations of the product, like Mary said, a data model, perhaps prototype screens, a description of the user role that Mary was talking about, such as a persona, perhaps for business rules, decision tables, whatever we need so we can collaborate together and understand what it is we're going to build. So that visualize the work and the product together.
That's pretty neat. In terms of the general perception and adoption, how are companies reacting to Agile methodology? Do you see a lot of traction in the industry towards this?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that the studies, the research, and Version 1 has just recently published another research that they do yearly. Agile has moved from being an early adopter, and it's moved into the mainstream. So pretty much every organization is at least piloting Agile in somewhere, and many are transforming bottom-up or top-down or middle-out. So I think what will happen is many projects, many organizations will just, as a de facto standard, be doing iterative and incremental, and maybe even the term Agile will go away. Just like years ago, the term, the hot thing was object orientation. And now nobody talks about it because, of course, that's how you do your building. Right? That's how you do development, is using object-oriented practices. So the same thing is going to happen with Agile. It's going to be more cost beneficial, team and time beneficial. So it is moved into mainstream. And if it's not yet on a project that you're working on, it will be. It'll be coming to a theater near you.
Or coming to a project near you.
Yes, absolutely.
yeah, absolutely. And any closing comment on that note, Mary?
No, we just love to get feedback from folks. Between the EBG newsletter and the blog and comments, we're getting emails from folks. We do these. I did a webinar recently, this just 2 days ago, and getting emails from people. So it's really powerful. We love to have that dialogue, however we can get it, and often it's virtual. But that's great, hearing what people are thinking and doing and being able to share ideas. We love it.
Thanks a lot. I'll talk to you guys.
Thank you for having
me. I hope you enjoyed this episode with Alan and Mary as much as I did producing it. And always remember, it's the goal and not the role. And I'm sure you've also learned other great insights from both of them. They're really industry experts and very open and sharing and collaborating with the community. So thanks again, Alan and Mary, if you're listening to this. And if you want to ask any questions to Mary or Ellen, or leave a comment on this podcast, please go to thebacoach.com/23, the number 23. And a quick reminder about the boot camps in London and Toronto, please go to thebacoach.com/London or /Toronto and register yourself if you plan to take the exam in the near future. Well, that's it from me for this episode. I hope to see you on thebacoach.com. Bye for now.